Impressions edition of the Colts Cover 2 podcast. I am Joel A. Erickson. I'm here with my sports editor, Nat Newell, to break down what was a 31-3 Colts win over the hapless Houston Texans. Maybe I'm just going to start there, just with there are some really bad teams in this division.
And that's a good thing.
It's a good thing for the Colts. It is. We knew they were bad last year because of what they finished with the quarterback whose situation we don't need to go into here because we don't cover the Texans, thank goodness.
Correct.
They needed late stuff to beat this team
twice. They were lucky to beat them in both games.
Yeah.
They should have lost both games to them last year.
And I can't believe that Texans team has a win.
Well, they beat Jacksonville.
Well, and that's
a little more believable.
It's a little bit more believable, but that was pretty bad. That's a bad team.
But you don't need to apologize for being in a bad division. If you're in a great division, you can't use it as an excuse. If you're in a bad division, just take advantage of it. And the Colts have that chance. I mean, that's the only reason. I shouldn't say that's the only reason. That's a main reason why they're not totally buried right now.
That and the fact that there's 7 playoff teams instead of.
Yeah,
six.
That does
because
not
some of the other ones are, like you figure the Chiefs at 3-3 are going to end up better than they are, but Denver appears to be falling off. I don't know that the Raiders are going to be able to sustain now that they don't have a head coach.
You're given everything they're going through.
Miami is not a playoff contender like they were supposed to be. Who knows what the Patriots are?
I was going to mention the Patriots.
I don't have any idea what the Patriots are. Cleveland is suddenly 3-3.
Pittsburgh.
It looks terrible.
Yeah. Yeah, we're running out of teams.
The AFC might be more top-heavy than we realized 6 weeks in. It just feels like it. And so maybe that seventh spot isn't a 10-6 team or 10-7 or 11-6. We'll go 11-6 like it would have been last year.
Right.
And maybe it is. Maybe one of those teams figures it out. Maybe the Colts figure it out. But I was looking around the scores, and I was just noticing that some of those teams that looked like maybe they were on a run out are coming back to the pack. And then there's other ones that, like I said, with the Patriots, I have no idea.
And they've been a confusing team to be very competitive with Tampa Bay, almost lose to the Texans. The game today, from what we saw, was all over the place.
Yeah, we're taping this, I think, as they're winning? They were winning. They were winning, and then they might be. So there might be more of an opportunity to get back in this thing. And from one perspective, I think I tweeted this during the game. It's something that I wrote about today, and it's rambling around in my head. But this offense so far is not as efficient as last year's was.
And I guess you should expound on that because obviously today there were a lot of things to like. They're playing the Texans, so we don't want to get too crazy.
Well, they're not as efficient in that they've had troubles in the red zone. I'm kind of going more whole season than what we've seen than what we saw today. They stall out at times. Sometimes the running game doesn't look great for a little bit. Not that it always did last year in the beginning of the year either. But third down, they were only 3 of 10 today. They just have some drives that stall out. You'd like to see them be a little more consistent. The flip side of that is I am 100% certain that this offense is more explosive than last year's was. And that can make up for some of the inefficiencies. It has the last two games, really. They should have scored more than 30 points against Baltimore, and a lot of that was big plays. They got stuck behind the sticks, and Jonathan Taylor rolls with a 76-yard touchdown against Baltimore. They had the Pittman play. Like, this team is getting the kind of big, explosive, highlight reel plays that Colts fans have wanted to see for a while. And that feels like with Wentz, as long as Wentz is healthy and honestly with Taylor at running back, it feels like something that's going to keep happening. It was interesting. Someone in the press conference asked Taylor if he worked on his speed because he didn't have as many of those big plays last year. He's having them this year. As somebody who's watched a lot of Wisconsin football in my day, that is why they drafted him. That's always been there. The real reason is that he wasn't real comfortable in the first half of last year. When Jonathan Taylor gets comfortable and knows who he is, what you're seeing the last couple of weeks is Jonathan Taylor. There's a lot of there might be some runs that there's like he can do the 5-yard run and push the pile and stuff like that. But Jonathan Taylor in college was a guy who you just watched games wondering, okay, when's it going to happen? Because it happened every game. And it's starting to be like that. There's a big run against Tennessee, big run against Baltimore. Like they've been – they already have 5 runs of 20 yards or more, which is fourth, tied for third or tied for fourth in the league. And that's going to keep happening with Taylor there.
And it's an interesting point in that, I mean, the last 6 games of last season, he was the second best running back in the NFL behind mm-hmm. Derrick Henry. 6 games doesn't mean he can do it for 17, but we've certainly seen, you know, what he can be between that snapshot last year and then the last really 3 games. I mean, against Baltimore, it was more receiving than rushing, but it doesn't matter as long as you got a running back.
He's at 5.4 yards a carry for the season now, which is pretty good.
Especially compared to, I think, the rest of the running backs, which have not been anywhere close to that.
Yeah, 5.4 is his the biggest thing is they just have to give him holes. They didn't. When you're live tweeting games and trying to analyze them as they go, this happens all the time. But I had an all-timer today where right before Taylor breaks out for an 83-yard touchdown run, like minutes before, I tweeted the Colts have 21 yards on 11 carries. They haven't really gotten going. And they hadn't.
And it was, and they could have if they wanted to, although they had so few plays in the first half.
Well,
that,
I think,
it just didn't seem like they had a – I mean, obviously they could have handed the ball off more, but it didn't seem like they were comfortable doing it given how few plays they ran.
I think a big reason is, if you go back and look at the play sheet, they were in second and long a lot in the first half.
I thought they run on second and long.
They do not. I know that's been a narrative for a while with Reich, and Nat's setting me up here because he knows I've been tracking this for weeks. But Frank actually is running the ball or passing the ball on like 80% of second and 6 or longers right now. I don't know the exact number. I haven't checked it, but he's been passing it 4 out of 5 times. So they don't run it on second and long as much. And that they were in second and long a lot early and he threw,
and so, he should. I mean, that's what all the numbers point.
All the analytics point to it. That's what Reich said. He said when he was talking about one of the games that Taylor didn't get a lot of carries, he said we were in second and long a lot. You really shouldn't run in that situation very often. So he understands that. I wonder if it's one of those things he went back and looked at. I don't know what his percentages were from last year. I apologize to the listeners. I'm not going to. It involves a lot of counting in game sheets that I don't want to do.
It's actually not that hard.
You can for the 2020 season. Well, you're
you
better.
Do it on Pro Football.
You're better at Pro Football Reference than I am.
And find it out pretty quickly. So.
Well, the only thing is, my only question for you is on Pro Football Reference, how do they handle scrambles?
I would believe they would count them as runs, but I'd have to go back and check.
Because there was one today that would have gone down as a run, but it went scrambled, so it was actually a pass. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. They were in a lot of passing situations early. And it's interesting because I think – I don't know this for sure. There's no way for me to know. I think some of the same people that get really mad when Jonathan Taylor has 3 carries at the half are also the same people who get mad when they run too much on second and long. So I don't have a good answer for how to make them happy necessarily, but well, I guess the answer to make them happy is to have everything go perfectly.
Absolutely. That's yeah. Like it would if they were calling the play.
Right. But they got it going in the second half. They something like 100, where'd they finish with like 174 rushing yards?
Something like that. And 150 of them in the second
so
half.
So after my tweet, they had 153 rushing yards, which I think I should take credit for.
I was going to say, so you're actually taking credit for that. Well, you do make an interesting point about the efficiency and that all the statistical analysis says the goal is to get lots and lots of first downs. Just keep the sticks moving. Obviously, if you can do that and have big plays, then you're in great shape. And I would think that it's probably a little bit easier to fix some of the things that go wrong that cause them not to be efficient than it is to all of a sudden be able to produce big plays. So I would think that they have a chance to be better on offense as the season goes along. I don't want to read too much into a Texans game, but it seems like they're getting – but we're not. I mean, we're also looking at at least the Ravens game.
Yeah, the Baltimore game is when I started thinking about this, actually. I think that there is the possibility for them to get more efficient in terms of if they can get less first down plays where they get stopped and they start getting into rhythm a little bit more. And if that happens and they have the explosiveness, they really could have something on their hands offensively. They really could be pretty good offensively, especially with Carson Wentz playing pretty well. I mean, there were some misses. He had a miss at Mo Alie-Cox that was on a third down that he really should have hit. He's 11 of 20. They didn't have very many plays.
No, and then Greg Doyle in his column, which is on IndyStar.com, noted there were a couple throwaways. There's a couple drop passes. I mean, he really
– well,
it was more impressive than 11 and 20 sounds.
That was what I was going to say is it really should have been three touchdown passes, and the one that got dropped was maybe his best throw of the day. Just an absolute laser to the corner of the end zone that didn't look like it had any shot when we were watching it live. And then you watch the replay, and it turned out it hit Mo Alie-Cox in the hands on the sideline falling over, and he just didn't make the catch. And is it a hard catch? Sure, but this is the NFL. I think podcast listeners know how I am. Like, that play, you have to make that play in the NFL. Now, Alie-Cox makes up for it a little bit later, but – this is one of the things about can we get Mo Alie-Cox the ball more? Like, sometimes with Mo Alie-Cox, he does miss these plays. There's a couple this year that he does. He's not as automatic on these plays as it seems. If he ever did get to that point, there might be like an Eric Ebron red zone-y type season in him. But you got to make that catch to get on that wavelength.
Sacks have been a little bit of an issue, as well this season in terms of the efficiency. And I don't know how much of that is on the offensive line versus how much of that is on Wentz. It seems like there's a little bit of both, obviously. And then the question is, I mean, obviously every quarterback is going to get sacked some, but the Colts have been one of the best in the league at it in years past. So, again, another reason to be optimistic if – Wentz isn't the total buffoon that every Philadelphia Eagles fan on Twitter thinks he is.
I think that the sacks are probably going to be an issue just continuously. I don't think that Colts fans are ever going to be super happy with Carson Wentz on terms of taking sacks. I don't necessarily know that that means that you should get rid of him. There are other quarterbacks who take a lot of sacks who are better that I don't want to mention. There's one I'm thinking of that I don't want to mention because it's an unfair comparison. But there are other guys who take a lot of sacks, and it doesn't necessarily mean that you can't win with – like, every quarterback has some flaw.
Yeah, I've always said if you look at the numbers, you'll see that almost all quarterbacks either take sacks or throw interceptions, and it makes sense. You're either getting rid of the ball to avoid the sack, and you're increasing your chance of throwing interceptions, or you're holding on to it so that you don't throw the interception and you get sacked. It's just the nature of the game. And the guys like Brady and Manning who don't do either, they go to the Hall of Fame. So even some of the guys who do one or the other go to the Hall of Fame. So it shouldn't, it's just, again, you can't expect everybody to be perfect all the time out there.
So I do think there's going to be some of that. I think the biggest thing on the line right now, if we're going to get in the offensive line a little bit, is just Eric Fisher. He continues to struggle.
Yes, yeah, and you've got to hope that he gets healthier. But, the Achilles is obviously a really tough injury to come back from. You've mentioned it many times that it can take a year before those guys feel 100% again.
I think the larger issue that maybe Colts fans can take with this is just that they relied on someone with a torn Achilles to lock down this spot that's so important to their offense. I know that there's people out there who are – Maybe justifiably wondering if Quentin Nelson can play left tackle since Chris Reed has looked so good at guard. The Colts have generally resisted that. I also wonder if all we know is that they were optimistic about Quentin coming back. I don't know that means that he's coming back fully healthy from a high ankle sprain. Generally, at least what I know of high ankle sprains, they take longer than 3 weeks to recover from. I don't know. If Quentin's coming back injured at first, a little bit injured, like able to play but not fully back, maybe not left tackle right away.
Well, the other thing is, with as well as Reed's playing, why do that? I mean, now the bright side is, a sprained ankle is something you do recover from. And yeah, I think you basically recover 100%, all things being equal. I'm not a football player. I'm not, they're going through things that we can't imagine. But so why, if Reed's playing well, I don't see any reason to rush
him. Don't rush him.
Yeah. I also can't see, they're not putting him at left tackle tomorrow or whenever he's healthy and benching Fisher unless they don't – I just can't see them doing that. I mean, again, we've talked about this at length, but the fact that they brought in Sam Tevy and Julian Davenport and had Will Holden as a holdover, you know, it sounds great to say, hey, there's a 20% chance each of these guys will work out. But, you know, that's not necessarily how you want to handle it. And they probably, you know, on one hand, maybe they certainly should have brought in someone better. On the other hand, would that person be playing now? If Fisher were healthy enough to be on the field, I think they'd still have Fisher out there.
Their best hope is still that Fisher figures it out a little bit more.
Yeah, yeah. And he could. I mean, there's no reason to think he won't.
He needs to – I mean, today there was – I mean, there were a couple of pressures, but there was also penalties today. Including one because he was getting beat. The tripping was the worst one because the tripping penalty almost got Carson Wentz hurt. When they first threw the flag, I thought it was because the defender hit Carson Wentz's legs, which is bad because like that's how Brady. That's,
right. They changed the rules.
They changed the rule because people's ACLs get blown out doing that. So if you're as an offensive lineman, if you're going to commit a penalty, don't commit a penalty that then also puts your quarterback in more jeopardy, which is what happened. I still think they're probably hoping that Eric Fisher figures it out here a little bit. He's going to have to compensate, I think. I don't know that he's going to get back the explosiveness that he wants. But there are guys who've been able to do that. I've covered people who were able – I covered Teron Armstead, who played with, like, essentially no leg for one season and was really good doing it. So there are ways to compensate for things. He's got to figure it out because with Wentz holding onto the ball a little bit, he's going to go – I think Wentz is going to go through some stretches in games. I don't think it's not all the time, but I think he goes through some stretches in games where he wants to hold on to it. And if he's going to have those, and that's a weakness, you also – you can't have it compounded by – left tackle issues. I mean, they're playing San Francisco next week. He's got Nick Bosa. So, you know, they're going to have to help him. But on top of that, like, they're going to play more games like that where they need him to be better than he's been so far.
But on a positive note, before we switch to the defense, have Taylor and Pittman been talked about enough in terms of what they might be for this team? I mean, we've talked. I mean, Taylor, I think maybe, but I don't know that Pittman's gotten the attention yet.
Taylor, I think so. Pittman, I don't think people are real. I don't think he's getting enough attention yet. Michael Pittman, I've said this before a lot on this podcast, and I don't know if it's just in case people don't remember, but there's two kinds of number one receivers. There's the number one receiver that's like, you know, the Julio Jones in Atlanta, where they can do everything and it's 120 catches and it's explosive plays, and it's all this stuff. And I mean, Michael Pittman actually has made some of those big plays, but he's not the downfield threat that some of these guys are. The thing is, you don't have to be a number one receiver. You just have to do what Michael Pittman's been doing, which is catch a lot of passes in critical situations, make plays, and I think we're seeing that from him. He's turned into that one receiver that they needed so that T.Y. Hilton could be a two. T.Y. is another big development. Depending on his quad, like with Campbell and T.Y., I think maybe the biggest development from today is that the speedsters made some plays.
I'm not convinced Campbell. One play doesn't convince me, given what we've seen from him. I was actually willing to be a believer coming into this year because I think he had two healthy games in his career, and both of them he would played really well. But I think we're now seeing what we've seen this season is he's supposedly been healthy and yet has not been very productive. And then he was productive and he immediately got hurt.
Well, I think the way he can get deep, though, is maybe not the way people were thinking he could get deep, where it's just one-on-one and he runs down the field. I think what we saw today is more of it. His speed can be used with Frank Reich scheming it. They ran a nice – like they essentially flooded one side of the field, three levels of receiver, and his speed ended up being a problem because of – them putting him in a schematic to disadvantage. And so I think you can exploit that with him as a complimentary receiver. I think maybe in the past they were hoping he would end up, I guess, essentially taking over for T.Y. in what T.Y.'s been able to do. They've needed a Pittman basically T.Y.'s whole career, and they're giving it to him too late.
Well, the number, I've tweeted it out, but the big receivers in Indianapolis Colts history is not an impressive list. Sean Dawkins, I believe, is number one. I'm missing it. There was another guy who was early for the Colts who was more of a tight end than a receiver, but is listed sometimes as a tight end. They just have not had guys like Michael Pittman, so it'll be interesting to see how he develops.
Taylor, to your point, though, I mean, we kind of touched on this a little bit at the beginning, but, like, I think that we all know that there's not a lot of separation at the running back position. That's why good people can get them. I think where there is separation is when guys – well, there's one set of separation between Derrick Henry and the rest of the humans that play running back. And then the next set of separation is a guy who can consistently give you big plays. And they have that in Jonathan Taylor. And it's really hard to find that. There's not that many backs. There's some backs who seem productive – who can't give you that in the NFL right now. We don't know if Taylor's going to be able to continue being durable. He always has before. If you can have a durable back who can give you those big plays, I think we've been asking a little bit about why Taylor isn't getting 20 carries a game. It might be okay.
Well, I was going to say, based on your point, it's if you can give those big plays, it means you can get your numbers in 15 carries instead of 20, which is five fewer hits, which adds up, and maybe you get an extra year or two out of him than you would a normal running back.
I know Derrick Henry is somehow resistant to the carries he's getting, but most running backs aren't.
Right.
And I keep thinking that at some point this is going to catch up with Henry too. And I just keep thinking with Taylor, like, we keep asking, like, don't you want to give him 20 carries? And I'm like, I mean, if you can win and not give him 20 carries, it's not the worst thing in the world.
I was remiss in not bringing up T.Y. Hilton. Obviously, he's been a huge part of this franchise since he's been here. I thought his press conference was very interesting, in which he basically said, yep, we had energy, and it's because of me. The fans get energy from me. The players get energy from me. It's all because of me. But he's not wrong.
No, he's right. That's what the players said, too. That's what the rest of the players said, too. And Frank Reich said that T.Y. gave one of the best speeches he's ever heard in a pretty long career as a player and a coach on Saturday morning. T.Y., I think his leadership is something that maybe we've underestimated.
Well, and it's because before you got here, who knows what's going on in the locker room, but there were times where some people question his leadership. I mean, he was, you know, everyone's young when they come into the league. Certainly that can be an issue. You're a receiver. You're used to getting certain stuff. He sort of called out the offensive line once. But there's no doubt he's – whatever issues he may or may not have had, he's the guy now in that locker room. One of the guys in that locker room.
They talked about it all week, and I think that maybe that's something we're underrating a little bit with him. I think from an offensive standpoint, I think T.Y. Hilton, regardless of what level of player he is now, is always going to be able to get open. And I think it matters on this team because Zach Pascal is a complimentary guy. Paris Campbell looks like a complimentary, you know, guy that you have to scheme open. It helps to have two guys who can just get open. Can just get open.
I think you made a great point with I don't know if Pittman's the one and T.Y. Hilton's the two, but if you've got two guys, and there's been the nonsense, is T.Y. Hilton the true number one receiver? You know, there's eight number one receivers in the NFL, so stop worrying about that. If you're counting on that, then good luck. But if you have two guys who may be a one or maybe a two or maybe they're both twos, at that point, who cares? You got two guys who are really productive, and that solves a lot of those problems. I mean, if you're not a quote-unquote legit number one, well, maybe having two really good guys opens up one of them every week, and it just makes things so much easier, I would assume, for any team, for any offense.
Yeah, well, it just means that there's been plays here where Carson has held the ball because there weren't people open. There have been ones where he held it where there were people open and he missed them. But there have been plays where he's holding it where there aren't people open. It's a lot harder for that to happen if Hilton and Pittman are both on the field. Moving to the defensive side of the ball. Only gave up 3 points. Three turnovers?
Three turnovers, and then the fourth. They stopped him on fourth down.
Including the magic of Darius Leonard, which... Yeah.
And they actually could have had two more turnovers that they were overturned, I believe, by the officials. I mean, I think they were at least somewhat questionable. So
that the turnover producing arm of the Colts defense has not been actually has been pretty good, I think, so far.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Darius Leonard, I think, needs to, like, it deserves credit for this. Darius Leonard's taken a little bit of a beating this year, and probably deservedly so, but he's...
And he hasn't shied away from it. He's owned it, to his credit.
He's played on a really bad ankle, and it's pretty obvious that he's playing on a bad ankle. But I was just marveling today at the fact that he somehow still has, on a bad ankle, 2 interceptions, 2 forced fumbles, 3 fumbles recovered this season. He just creates turnovers. And I'm going to make a comparison to a different position here. There is a room for a guy who creates that many turnovers, even if you're losing something else. And you can see it in corners. Marcus Peters is a guy like this. Aqib Talib was a guy like this at times. Like, there are cornerbacks who teams know are going to get beat sometimes because the interceptions they're going to create are such a big deal. That's what Darius is going to have to be this year. His ankle is clearly not where it needs to be. It's probably going to have to – they're going to have to do something after the season to fix it. He can be that guy, though. I mean, you saw it today. He has an interception that sets up a touchdown. Houston's only – one of their only drives that had a real shot at scoring. It turns into a punch. He gets the fumble. He can be that kind of player where the big plays he creates – are so big that they outweigh some of the stuff you're losing with a player whose ankle isn't there.
And you also wonder if Anthony Walker were still here, would he compensate for some of the stuff that they're losing without Leonard? I don't know. There was a lot of hype around Bobby Okereke. I believe I got that right. And I don't know that he's lived up to that so far. But maybe if Leonard's something resembling himself, maybe we don't notice that. I don't know.
Darius was good. The defense situationally was good. Overall, if you're looking at this game as are they on the right track after some of the stuff we've seen this season? I don't know if I saw that. They still struggled to pass. Struggled to rush the passer. I felt like
with 3 starting offensive linemen out for a not very good team.
Right. Quiddy Pay did say he felt rusty today. I think people are putting a little bit too much expectation on him. But he said he felt rusty today. They didn't have enough pass rush. Because they didn't have enough pass rush, and also because the Texans, I think, understood that they didn't have linemen. And so they
– A lot of short, quick stuff.
Got the ball out of – but the Colts cornerbacks, with the exception of – and I'm going to keep saying this until it's not true. Rocky Sin gave up some completions. But a lot of them were really good throws and really good catches and pretty good coverage before he got hurt again. Xavier Rhodes, not so much.
Hey, he sort of broke up a pass today. I think he deserved credit for it. He got his hand up and the ball came over his hand. I don't think he touched it, but there's no doubt that, it's not easy to catch a football when someone's waving their hand in front of your face.
Yeah. No, I think with Rhodes, the funny thing is I said that's the first play he's really made this year, and then you're like, I don't know if he really made it when you saw the replay. They need more out of him. He just has to be better. He was a better player than this last year. And there were times that I actually thought the Texans were sort – in the first half, I sort of felt like they were targeting Rhodes a little bit.
It looked like it, yeah. You were not the only one. Yeah, I saw other people making that point on Twitter. I wasn't
– When Rock was in the game – They need better play from him. They give up too. They're always going to give up completions. They give up too many completions. I think the other thing that would concern me is that the Texans running game at 120 yards today. It's a really bad rush offense. Like, they had 4 straight games with fewer than 100 yards and fewer than 3 yards per carry, and the Colts gave up 124 rushing yards. I feel like the signs on the offense are more positive as a cumulative as Wentz gets healthy than any signs we've seen from the defense. I think the signs from the defense we've seen still make me concerned about what that defense can be against better teams, better quarterbacks.
Yeah, I don't certainly don't disagree with you on that. I would say, you know, in the modern NFL, especially in a 31-3 game, although it was competitive in the first half, quote unquote, I don't particularly care how many rushing yards the team gives up. It's just not, you know, you and I disagree on this to some level, but I just don't know how important that is, especially in a game like this. I also think they've always given up a high completion percentage. I mean, they're allowing some, I mean, the worst completion percentage since Eberflus has been here. They're allowing a completion percentage that would lead the league by, you know, any year. I just think that's how the defense is designed, which you've gone into at length, and it's then just a matter of whether they make the tackles or not. I don't want to. Is there a pretty strong argument that you'd rather not have the opposing teams completing 75% of their passes? Yeah, I think there is. But at the same time, that's the defense that they're running. That's the scheme, and then they try to make the tackle. So I would focus a little bit less on that if I was a Colts fan, and more on what happens after the pass is caught. Like you say with Yassine, you know, he lets them catch the ball, but if you're dragging them down before they get to the first down mark, then that might be okay.
Yeah, he gave up some first downs today, but it was because it was like 3rd and 3,
yeah,
or something like that. You know, his ankle injury is one to watch because I mean I was worried from a perspective of last year. He was out for 2 games, came back, maybe wasn't the same type of player. I was impressed that he looked pretty good again. Rakusin has just been the Colts' best corner.
Yeah, that's not a high bar necessarily.
He actually looks like he could maybe be a corner for this team moving forward, which I think is something that people wouldn't have expected coming into this year. A lot of it depends on whatever happened with his ankle, and what's going on with it. But if you're looking for a positive in the secondary, it's probably that. And also, I felt like Kari Willis looked more like himself today.
Well, and Blackman's made some plays lately.
With Julian Blackman, I wonder if the issues they've had elsewhere in the secondary and with the pass rush is just allowing teams to avoid him. You know, he's not a guy who's going to be put in position where he's primary coverage a lot. He's those free safety, he takes away a lot. And when you if there's a free safety over one person and then you have four other options, all of whom have struggled, just ignore whoever 32's by.
Yeah.
You know?
And he made a lot of plays early last year. Jim Aiello wrote a story saying he was a legitimate defensive rookie of the year candidate, not necessarily that he would win the award. And then, and just in case Jim's listening, 100% legitimate story at the time, no issues there. But that was pretty much the last time we saw him make a play until the last couple weeks. So
yeah, he's been coming forward and harder down on shorter stuff a little bit more. I think Julian Blackman maybe, I don't know if he gets, I don't think anyone in the secondary gets a pass, but I would say that with him, I wonder if it's just teams just there's just no reason to test to worry about him with the way some of the rest of the team is playing.
Right, especially the corners. I mean, yeah, just avoid him. Corners. Yeah, yeah.
Or Willis,
or go after the corners that are one-on-one.
Willis early was giving up touchdown passes too. So
right.
I thought Kari looked healthier. He looked better. He had a sack today.
And he almost had an interception.
Yeah, he was playing. He looked more like the Kari we saw last year. So if there's something to feel good about, maybe it's that Yassine and Willis look. Like Yassine looks like he's looked all season. Willis is starting to play a little bit better. I just have concerns for this defense going forward.
Yassine's looked good in other stretches, and then so there's no reason to think he couldn't extend those stretches and be. And now again, is it legitimate to be concerned about it at the beginning of the season? Absolutely. But I think maybe he's turned a corner. It's still too early to say. I think he's played well for longer stretches than this and then had problems. But I think, you know, there's no reason to give up on Rock Yassine at this point.
No, in fact, I think it's in sort of an expectations way, the way people maybe are getting more out of Carson Wentz than they thought they were going to get. I think you're getting more out of Rock Yassine than people thought they were going to get.
Which is good because there's a whole bunch of guys that they haven't got as much as they expected
right,
out of.
Right. And that's the thing is that maybe going back to your Pittman and Taylor point is that there have been a lot of guys they're not getting as much out of as they thought they were going to. But there are positives in here. They're like Pittman surging into a true starting receiver is a big deal for this team. Taylor continuing to be a star matters. This team needs stars. Like they need the explosive playmaking. There is stuff to see. We'll see what happens when they go to San Francisco. One of the things we're going to be watching this week is just who the heck is San Francisco's quarterback.
Yep.
Both Garoppolo and Trey Lance have injury questions. So it'll be interesting to see what happens going forward. But they had to have this win, and they got it. And they got it in dominant fashion. And there's been a lot of games like this, I think, over the last 4 years with Reich, where they're struggling a little bit. They go into a game against a bad team, and they end up just stomping them.
Which was different than the Pagano era, certainly. And
we have to make the exception of any road game in Jacksonville because it's a curse. But
other than that,
there's a lot of games where teams have come in here or they've gone somewhere against a bad team and just rolled right over them.
And I said, I mean, if you're gonna kill the Colts for losing to the Seahawks, for losing to the Rams, and you know, fairly, I'm not saying that you shouldn't. I think you can't just dismiss beating a bad Texans team as the flip side of that. I mean, good that they hammered a bad team. I mean, that, and you got to take some positives.
Well, like
out
we
of
just
that.
Said, like we just said, the Patriots got taken to the limit by the Texans last
right,
week and almost
right.
got beaten. So, it's Texans are bad, but that doesn't mean that they're not capable of beating somebody if they don't play well. I guess that's it for the moment. That's it for the First Impressions podcast. I will be back with another guest host in the middle of the week. And then I hate to tell you this, Nat, but next week is a Sunday night game.
Oh, that's – yeah. As you get older, when I was young, staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning was normal. Now that I'm old, staying up until 2 o'clock in the morning ruins me for 3 days.
Yes. So the next week's First Impressions podcast will be another late night affair like it was in Baltimore. And I'll be on the West Coast, so I won't be getting it nearly as badly as you do. So I apologize in advance. Blame Jim. If Jim's listening, you can blame Jim.
Well, this would also be a good chance to anyone who's listened this long. We do have a new beat writer lined up. We haven't announced the person yet, and we will soon. They've got another job, and we'll discuss when is the best time to do it. But we will have a second Colts writer joining Joel here, hopefully in a couple weeks is the plan. So if you've listened this long, then you've got a special breaking news bulletin.
And that's it from a 31-3 win that hopefully I think lets a little bit of pressure out of Colts fans. I was at church this morning and there was lots of tight faces and tight shoulders. So hopefully it lets a little pressure off and you can enjoy it for at least a week.
All they need to do is win the next 4 games and everything changes.
Yeah, then it'll be very different walking into church in the morning.
Thank you.